Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Bolt here, and joining me today is James McCray. James is an author, poet, and a meme artist based in Austin, Texas, same as me. In his writing and art, he applies the principles of mindfulness and Eastern philosophy to modern life with humor and candor. His debut book is called Stuff Your Ego Says, but not stuff, it's S-H-I-T, Your Ego Says, explores the relationship with between ego and intuition and offers practical insights for making friends with your own mind. It sold thousands of copies around the world and has been translated into 6 languages. He's got another book since then out at the end of 2021, How to Laugh in Ironic Amusement During Your Existential Crisis. This is going to be a fun one. We're gonna talk about poetry. We'll talk about memes. We'll talk about combining those two in books, traditional publishing, self-publishing. There's a lot of different things to unpack here. James, great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chandler. It's I'm excited to talk to you today. I love books. I love reading. So I love a podcast that is focused on those areas.
Well, you're in the right place, man. It sounds like your background is in poetry and memes, and or at least from what I could gather. From that, what made you decide to write a book? Like, what was kind of the spark for that?
My first book?
Mm-hmm.
My background has been in all kinds of different, you know, creativity. I did start writing poetry when I was like 14, and I wrote, you know, I probably wrote 1,000 poems before I graduated high school. So that's something that I did a lot, and always been an artist as well. I spent a lot of time painting. Went to college for design. So really, you know, for a while was even more kind of slanted in the visual design direction, especially because that just seemed like a more of a feasible way to build a career from creativity. Like doing graphic design was more creative to me than, you know, trying to write for like journalism or something like that. So my first book, I always wanted to write books, and I always in the back of my mind knew that I would and really wanted to. And I never quite knew when that would happen or what the book would be. I've always had so many diverse interests. And my first couple attempts at writing books were self-published compilations of blog posts. So I put out a couple, like, you know, just PDFs for sale that were essentially like compilations of, you know, writing from my blog. And that kind of got my feet wet a little bit in terms of like publishing and compiling, a collection of work. And my first book came about, you know, just like I'd always wanted to write a book. I had always wanted to live in New York City. And that was kind of always in the back of my head. I had seen so many artists, so many writers who had passed through New York that always seemed like a goal that I had for myself. For whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it finally happened. I finally was like living in Minnesota, and I really wanted to, you know, I was feeling stuck. I was feeling a little bit stagnant working in advertising in Minnesota. So I finally gathered the courage to quit my job, you know, sell all my stuff and take the leap of faith and move to New York City without a plan, without much money, without a job, just trusting the universe that the right path would unfold. And sorry, this is a longer story than I think you probably had expected for, but this is really how my first book came about. And what happened was I moved to New York just before the city was hit by Hurricane Sandy in 2012. So I was already kind of like struggling to, get established, find a job. I was running out of money. And then suddenly Hurricane Sandy destroyed my apartment and I was left homeless. And long story short, I didn't have anywhere to live. A friend invited me to stay on this small island in the Caribbean called Culebra. And I took basically the last of my money and flew to this little, tiny little island 17 miles east of Puerto Rico called Culebra. And I proceeded to have a nervous breakdown because, I felt like such a failure. I thought I was going to New York to chase my dreams of being a writer, of being an artist. And now I couldn't even find a job. I ran out of money and now I'm homeless on this little island. And I was spent a lot of time sitting on the beach, just alone with my thoughts, and basically spent hours in a state of meditation, just reflecting on my life. And all my fears and insecurities rose to the surface. And I sat with them for so long that I started to recognize these thoughts, these fears, these insecurities, they were not truly me. They were the voice of my ego. And I sat long enough and I started to differentiate the difference between my ego and my intuition and the voice of my higher self and the voice of my ego. And it was in that moment that I realized, oh shit, your ego says, this is a book title. And the whole kind of book downloaded to me, in that moment. So it was the kind of funny story where what appeared on the surface to be the worst thing that ever happened to me ended up being the best thing that ever happened to me, because that ended up being the spark that my first book came from. And I started writing it there on the island, and I continued writing it for a few years while working in advertising, and got a few extremely lucky breaks, and ended up getting that book published.
Yeah, that's amazing. What a great story. And I think a reflection point for everyone listening or to this or on the podcast or watching on the YouTube channel is what's that rock bottom equivalent in your life, and how might that be the spark for the book that you're meant to write? And I mean, some people would say making your mess your message, but kind of sifting through that and saying, hey, what's the kernel in here that might be helpful for other people? And so you kind of mentioned, hey, a couple of lucky breaks. How'd you go from, all right, this is the download, all right, I'm writing this book, to getting a book deal? Because I think if I'm not mistaken, that was published through Penguin Random House.
Yeah, well, Penguin Random House is the distributor for Hay House, and Hay House is the imprint that published it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, got it. So how did you get that book deal, and what did that process look like?
Yeah. Like I said, I got extremely lucky, or else you could say it was extremely aligned in the right place at the right time. So basically, I knew I wanted to write this book. I knew that I had to write it. Like, the vision was so clear. I just knew I had a lot of book ideas in the past that felt good for a second, but they didn't stick. This one, I knew right away that I would finish it and publish it. How? I did not know yet. So I really set about writing it. And, I didn't have any platform at that time. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have an audience. I had none of those things. I didn't have an email list. But I knew I had to write the book. So I really just committed to writing the book. And I felt like I made a deal with the universe. And I said, listen, it's my job to write the book. It's your job to get it out there. So I'm going to do my job, and I'm going to count on you to do your job. And I made it, and I made a bargain. So I get probably halfway through writing the book. This is probably at least a year and a half, if not longer, into the process of writing the book. And I'm working full time in advertising, and I'm writing the book every morning and every night, basically. And finally, it gets to the point where I'm like, okay, I should put together a book proposal. So I basically like looked up, what is a book proposal? How do you put one together? Learned how to do that. And put together a book proposal with some sample chapters and things like that. And I proceeded to send out that book proposal to every email address in the publishing world that I could find. Tons of agents, tons of editors, all kinds of publishers, and I didn't even get rejections. I basically just got silence. It was just like nothing. It was just crickets. And I'm like, wow. Here I am thinking I'm writing a really good book, and I can't even get a phone call from an agent, you know, and because I didn't have a platform. I didn't have an audience yet. I had no track record in this world. And while I was sending out proposals, at one point I had sent one to a friend. And he just to look at it, you know, and then he was completely unrelated. He was talking to someone else in the UK about a book, and they were pitching a different book to Hay House in the UK. And while he was talking to them, he's just like, well, let me just send them James's proposal just because I have, you know, I'm talking to them right now. So without telling me, my friend sends my book proposal to Hay House in the UK. They loved it. They send it to the New York offices. So one day I just get a random email from Hay House saying, hey, we got your book proposal. We loved it. We'd love to have you come in for a meeting. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't even realize this was happening, right? And the next day I go into the New York Hay House offices for a meeting, and they tell me, wow, this is one of the best book proposals we have ever seen. If you had an audience, we would publish this tomorrow, but you don't have an audience. You need to grow your audience, right? So I left, you know, feeling optimistic because there was hope, there was interest, but I still needed to grow my audience. Well, the next day I get an email from Hay House, and they said, hey, listen, we have a conference coming up in Chicago, and it's for aspiring writers, and we're going to give a book proposal to one person who attends. Now, the cost of this conference is like $7,000 to attend, but we want to send you there for free. So they send me to the conference, which I attend, and I win, and then they end up giving me a book proposal that way.
Wow. Yes.
So when I say a few lucky breaks, I really do mean that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, I mean, you also created your own luck, right? You did the research on how to create a book proposal. You created a great book proposal. You showed up. You then went and won the contest. Any takeaways from the book? Because I would assume, I'm just connecting the dots, and it's kind of fun to connect the dots here too. Of like, I feel like a lot of authors on this show have come from the advertising world. Even Stephen Pressfield, you know, who. You know, writes The War of Art and then writes The Legends of Bagger Vance and like these fictional, you know, fictional books and movies and nonfiction. He came from the advertising world. I feel like that shows up a lot. Was there anything that you learned from the advertising world that helped you write a great book proposal, or were there any kind of core things that you felt like, oh, this is why the book, they said, hey, this is one of the best book proposals that we've seen?
Yeah, no question. You know, because in advertising, I had so many roles. You know, I was a graphic designer for a few years, and then primarily I worked as a brand strategist. So I would position and name and create marketing campaigns for companies. So I developed a knack for distilling things down to their essence and communicating things in a way that would connect and ultimately resonate with audiences. So from a book proposal standpoint, I had design skills. So I put together a really well-designed, nicely packaged, clean, attractive proposal. And also just being able to even like having a clever name for the book. That's something that, you know, I was naming companies at that time. I was like literally like naming products and coming up with slogans for, you know, marketing campaigns. So having those like snappy, quick hitting names and taglines and, you know, description copy really helped me out. And also things like, okay, identifying who the audience is. Because that's something else I was doing. I was helping companies identify who their audience personas were. Right. Yeah. So in my proposal, I had, you know, it was almost like a brand strategy I would do for a company. I had all of my own target audiences in there, as well as all the different ways that I would plan to market the book, because I had already had experience, you know, marketing for these companies. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. I took a lot away from advertising that helped me, you know, write the book and also, you know, put together that proposal.
Yeah, that's great. A lot of parallels there. Let's maybe backtrack just a little bit on the writing side of things. You mentioned, I think earlier, you'd written like 1,000 or 1,400 or something poems in high school. And you obviously have a background in creating poems and as a meme artist. What do you feel like you learned from those two things that helped you write a better book? And maybe any inspiration for people who have written a lot of poetry and they're thinking about taking kind of that leap to writing their first book?
Yeah, well, I didn't make any memes until much later.
Okay.
After the first book, right? So, but I mean, I think poetry, for one, is the most, it's the most pure form of language in a way. There's not a strong agenda in poetry. It's an open-minded format. And there's room for nuance and subtlety in a way that a lot of other writing does not allow. So I feel like it gave me a grasp on writing in a way that was fluid and that flowed and that was inspiring and that didn't, you know, wasn't too preachy. You know, I think a lot of, especially in the self-help world, I think there's a chance and a tendency for some of these books to come off as preachy, or like, I'm telling you this that I learned. And it's like, that kind of approach never appealed to me, but because I was kind of a poet first, it allowed me to approach topics in a way that was a little more nuanced, a little more inspirational, a little more all-encompassing of multiple perspectives at the same time. Because that's like, poetry has the ability to hold space for contradiction. And I think that's, you know, that's what reality is. If you're not holding space for contradiction, I think your writing and your work is going to be a little more one-sided. And it's maybe not going to like be as inclusive or just all-encompassing. And then strangely enough, I found the same thing with memes later on, is that I found memes to be a format of creativity and writing that allowed space for nuance and subtlety, where you could, you know, you could get on your soapbox and give a lecture or write an essay that was trying to hammer home a point. And in doing so, you're going to, for the most part, preach to the choir. And if you're not already kind of on board, you're going to be turned off by that. But with memes and poetry, the common ground between those that I found is that they bypass this kind of critical analysis part of the brain, and it kind of cuts through to the heart. And there's a a visceral, you know, reception, where, you know, if you send someone a meme, they just kind of get it instantaneously, and it just has a different delivery mechanism that I think poetry also has. So it's almost like giving your message with a spoonful of sugar, where you can really like deliver things in a way that's more palatable and a little more, I feel, inclusive, as opposed to being, you know, there's so much division in our, you know, world today, and so many things are too binary or too you know, one-sided, where I feel like these mediums can kind of raise the conversation above the banter and find kind of a shared vision that surpasses the kind of what I feel like are the false binary dichotomies that are overwhelming, you know, the world today.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really interesting perspective.
Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right, so if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement.
And I feel like they're probably also highly iterative, where, you know, if you wrote 1,000 poems, it's like different, it's different thoughts, and then you shipped it and then you're on to the next one. And same with memes, which I would assume would make your writing better in a way that if I'm writing one book, it can take me a really long time to get to the end of that and then to be able to reflect and then use what I learned to improve. So it's almost like a faster process of making your writing better. Do you feel that way or no?
Yeah, it could be. And I feel like it's related to the way people consume content today as well, you know, at least on, you know, social media. I think social media is really having a big change in how people consume content. And it's like more like bite-sized pieces of content. Mm-hmm. And they may seem disconnected at times, but I think they all kind of share a similar theme. So like my writing, when I write books, I'm definitely influenced by my work writing poetry and memes, in that I make things chunky, accessible, mm-hmm. you know, easy to digest. My books are very visual. There's always art and, you know, pops of, you know, color and design and visuals, because I feel like books need to adapt a little bit more to the culture of consumption, especially when it comes to the internet. That doesn't mean that books can't be deep and thought-provoking and very, you know, substantial, but I think that, you know, that there's so much, and I'm a fan of, you know, social media content as well. You know, I really think that it can be just as deep and substantial as like a long-form book. It's just mm-hmm. consumed differently in more bite-sized chunks. So we're just kind of, part of my work right now as an author is to kind of combine these two things, where I try to make my memes and my short social media content have a little more, you know, depth and be a little more thought provoking. And then from the book side, have my books be more, you know, digestible and accessible and fun to consume. So I'm kind of trying to bridge that world between, you know, the traditional literary world and mm-hmm. then the new world of the internet and social media, and trying to find like the common ground between these pretty different types of media.
I like that. And you did combine that, right, with your most recent book and memes and poems into a book. And so talk to me about the thought behind that, because I think the common, in the publishing world at least, it's like the common belief is like, okay, poetry books don't sell well. And meme books, and like, unless you're going for like a coffee table type thing, like Urban Outfitters style book, like it's probably not going to sell well. And so it's from the marketable perspective, it feels like, okay, why would you do this? And I think it can be very discouraging for people who are like, hey, I have this passion for poetry. Like I want to create a poetry book. And then it's like in my team at self-publishing school or self-publishing.com is like, a lot of times it's like, hey, just, we got to give you some hard truth. Like this can be really hard to sell. And some people are like, I don't care. This is a passion for me. I'm doing it anyway. And some people say, hey, I'm going to be the 1% that rises out. I'm going to package it in a unique way. So maybe what was the spark for you of creating that style of book, and any encouragement for people who are on that path to wanting to create a poetry book or a meme book or something like that?
Yeah, well, you know, the spark was, it was the beginning of 2020, and I was working on a different book, and it was a book more of a traditional self-help book about kind of optimizing your career with mindfulness, like that kind of thing. And then, you know, 2020 happened, and the pandemic and all of those things kind of started to unravel, and the world, the, you know, the shared fabric that we, you know, relied on as a society started to unravel. And I quickly felt that the book I was working on was no longer relevant, because a lot of people didn't even have jobs anymore. And it seems like the challenges we were facing as a world were greater than what that book was offering, right? So I really abandoned that book and just went on at my own inner exploration, as so many people did during that time, right? And then, you know, at that point, I had not been writing poetry for many years. And that's just what started to come through me. And it, and for me, it was the only language that I could use to make sense of what was happening in the world. You know, there was so much, you know, division and so much confusion that poetry was the only language that could really encompass all the different perspectives and subtleties of what I was thinking and what I was feeling at that time. And then I started making memes around that same time for that same reason. They offered me a way to communicate the strange, brave new world that we were entering into in a way that was, you know, because the world became and still is kind of increasingly absurd. And memes are a particularly good medium to express absurdity. So that's just what started coming out of me, right? So I really just and then I started sharing that on social media, and it turns out memes are pretty popular, and they're very they're something that gets shared quite a bit. Yeah. So it was really through making memes that my audience online really started to grow. So within a year, my audience on social media, you know, it doubled and it quadrupled, you know, like fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I had struck a nerve in, you know, the collective consciousness, because what I was, it wasn't just like, I have a passion to write poetry. It was, I was tapping into the collective mood that we were all kind of going through. So it was poetry and memes that were especially resonant for the times that we live in, and people really related to it. So once I had a big enough collection of poetry, I really got the idea of combining these two into a singular book, right? Yeah. And like I said, kind of bringing that world of that old world of poetry, because I think poetry is always, you know, books and poetry, they're always evolving. You know, every generation reinvents what poetry is and what books can be, right? So I really just realized that even memes could be a form of poetry, and I just started to play around with these mediums in different ways. And the result, it's my latest book. It's called How to Laugh in Ironic Amusement During Your Existential Crisis, and it's actually the first book of published memes, and then it's combined with poetry. So it's just really I'm showing into the book now, into the camera, but it's just really for me it was successful, because I was really tapping into a kind of a shared experience that we were all having that I feel like wasn't being appropriately addressed in entertainment, in literature, in music. It feels like no one was really tackling the absurdity of the world that we were living in. So I feel like because I was dealing with such relatable subjects, that's the reason why it was successful.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it feels like there's some synergy too, in that you created this platform and this audience using memes, and then use that to kind of distill and create the book. And so now there's this natural audience that's interested in buying that thing, which leads back to growing the platform, which leads back to selling more books. And so there's kind of some nice synergy there. What would you say, James? So it looks like that one was published through Thought Catalog, and then the first one through Hay House. Any lessons learned from either of those experiences that would be helpful for people who are thinking about traditionally publishing, self-publishing, or publishing through one of those publishers?
Yeah, well, you know, there's different things. I mean, the publishing with publishers for me is nice, because they take care of all the legwork of, you know, putting the book together and distributing it. And luckily, you know, Thought Catalog is a very visual company. They're dedicated, design is one of their core pillars in their products. So they were the perfect fit for this book, because they just had that design vision from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very helpful. Downside is they are, you know, a smaller independent company. So for example, international shipping has been an issue. You know, yeah, you've got to, you can order it internationally, but it's like they charge an arm and a leg for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, they neither publisher, I would say, did a ton of work in the promotion of it. I think that's, you know, typically left to the authors and their own platform. So that definitely helps. I mean, if you, I think a lot of people think that if they get a book published, they'll suddenly, you know, get an audience. And, you know, that's definitely not true. You know, my, like my first book, I got, again, really lucky in publishing it, but because I did not have that, I did not have that established audience to market to, you know, it didn't sell great initially because I had not yet built my audience. So it was cool to have a book published, but it wasn't, you know, an immediate bestseller, because you really do need to build that audience and that rapport with, you know, a following in order to have them be ready to buy from you. And if you do have a loyal audience and a dedicated following, it shouldn't make a big difference whether you publish or self-publish, right? Because your audience is there regardless. So even though I did kind of sidestep that step on my own publishing journey, it definitely is really important for the success of your books either way, to have that built-in audience. And that's why, you know, I put so much care and effort and creativity into creating my online content. Yeah. You know, and I think of that, I don't want to save all my good ideas for this book that I'm building in solitude and no one will see it for 3 years until it comes out, right? I try to make it more of like I'm always sharing things on a regular basis and putting my good ideas out there for free. And then that just builds up that audience. So I treat my social media content with the same kind of mindset that I do in creating a book. Like it's, it is a book to me. It's just distributed a tiny bit every day in all these different formats. So, it's my own, you know, for me, it's a creative platform unto itself.
Yeah. And it's a great way to test what people like, what they don't like, what they respond to, while also, which helps content in the book be better while also building an audience that says, hey, I'm interested in buying James's book when it comes out. It's a fun iterative process. James, knowing what you know now, what would be your advice to the James from years ago prior to writing your first book and all the other Jameses out there who maybe have been writing poetry or thinking about writing their first book? What would be kind of your parting piece of advice?
Well, definitely stick with it. You know, there was a lot of, you know, again, I wanted to write books since I was, you know, pretty young, and there were a lot of twists and turns and ups and downs along that journey. But really holding that vision in your imagination and committing to it is really critical. And really, again, making dope social media content is so important. And, you know, that once I started really getting my groove on social media, you know, that kind of changed everything. So leveraging these platforms and finding your niche, and you know, these are the new town square, these are the new publishing platforms in a lot of ways. So finding your voice, putting yourself out there, you know, it took me a long time to be comfortable, you know, making social media videos, things like that. And once I did, you know, that just brings me even closer into contact with the audience. So putting yourself out there, you know, not holding back, being yourself, being authentic, and doing it consistently. These are critical for creators and authors of any sort these days.
That's awesome, man. Well, James, this has been fun. This is, I think, a very, probably similar to your life and your books, just non-traditional interview. Which has been awesome, man. Really, really cool and really inspiring. Where can people go to find out more about you, to buy your books, all that good stuff?
Yeah, well, and thanks for having me on. This is a really fun conversation. My main channel is my Instagram, which is @wordsarevibrations, all one word. And if you go to the link in my bio, you can check out my books. I've got a podcast called Words Are Vibrations. And I also help to coach and mentor creators into building their own platforms, into growing an audience and creating social media content. So you can find all that info either through the link in my bio on Instagram, and my website is jamesmcrae.com.
Cool. James, you're the man. It's been a lot of fun. Appreciate
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode helpful. All right, number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right, reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.